Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. We're getting near the pointy end of the season, and we've got four teams left in each boys' and girls' competitions now. As usual, I'm one of your co-hosts, Nathan Seppi, joined by my other co-host, Jonty Ralph-Smith. Jonty, big weekend of football. We're really finding out who's going to make that last final push in September.
Yeah, and I think it's no surprise that it's probably the four most talented lists, you could argue, in each of the boys and the girls that have made it through to this point. We obviously always see during the home and away season, it can be difficult to get a gauge on who's going to be the teams that are going to get up week to week with schoolboy footy and other representative footy going on. But I think now that we are back and at the pointy end, we're seeing a lot of talent really shine through.
And we'll start with the boys' elimination finals and move to the preview of their prelims, and then similar with the girls, but we'll keep it all streamlined. But we'll start a game you saw, Tasmania. 9-8-62, they defeated Gippsland 5-15-45. Now, the scoreline would suggest Gippy didn't kick straight and kick themselves out of it. Was that the case?
Certainly was, yeah. It was a windy day down at Highgate Recreation Reserve at Craigieburn, particularly in this game. It was a doubleheader, and this game was probably more affected by the wind. And Gippsland, particularly thinking back to the second quarter, they had all the running, but they just weren't able to put it on the scoreboard. Only won the quarter by a couple of points. And then from there, they still had all the running, but probably were always going to have to stave off a bit of Tassie momentum that was going to come. We know Tassie are a very good team. They've shown that throughout the course of the season. They did come. And unfortunately, Gippsland couldn't stave it off in the last quarter. But yeah, there were certainly a lot of players that stood up from a Tasmanian perspective, and it was an impressive clinical team win, I think.
Well, Ollie Dipali-Kubank, tell me a bit more about him. Bottom major that we've seen play some really good football lately, but again, did he stand out this one?
Yeah, and I think this was the week where he really took his game to another level. Like you say, we've seen him do little bits and pieces. He's a very confident player. He's slightly built, so there's a lot of scope left for him to go to. But it's just his speed that really stands out. When he gets the ball, he's able to use his legs, drive it forward. He kicked a couple of goals at really important times, back-to-back goals they were, and his work rate as well. So he got his hands on the ball a lot and was one that I really liked. Another one from a Tasmanian perspective I thought was really good was Ari Schoenmaker down back. I thought he was a clear best on ground with his aerial presence back there. He was a real thorn when Gippsland did look to go forward. One problem they probably did have was with their mid-inside 50 connection, that last entry kick going in, and Ari Schoenmaker was one who really punished them when he did get his hands on the footy. Just with his ball use, we know that elite left foot that he's got is one that has shown all year, and it was, again, really, really used to the Devils' advantage on the weekend. And I guess if there's some others to touch on, Lenny Douglas took his moments, had a couple of opportunities and kicked the goals that he needed to for his team. And Jack Callanan as well probably really reminded recruiters of what he's capable of. Kicked three goals at really important times. Thought he was well held by the Gippsland defenders for large parts. But certainly when he did have a couple of little opportunities, he seized upon them. And when he had the balls, he just looked powerful. He looked like the sort of player that we expected to see from him this year.
Well, you touched on those Gippy defenders. Tell me a couple that were pretty decent in this game, and I guess moving forward next year as well, as a couple to touch on.
Yeah, I think there are. It's the last time we're going to see Sam Houghton in Gippsland colours. He's an overager, a 19-year-old from Officer. So he will go back and play local footy now. You'd expect he might get a VFL pre-season. We'll have to wait and see on that one. But I think he's been a real important part of the power defence. And Zach Felsborg as well, I thought, was really good. He competed really hard throughout the day. And one just to look on going forward, you touch on someone to keep your eye out, a name to have some attention around, is Jai Esler. He's played senior footy at Turidan as a sort of rangy winger. He's still very slightly built. Obviously, we know key position type players do take some time to develop. And he's one who, as a defender, he's just a really honest tryer. He gives a really hard effort in the one-on-one, and he's certainly one to watch for next season as he puts a bit more size on. I think he's one who will cause some headaches for some opposition key forwards and will claim some scalps. Some others just on the day, just before we do move on from this game, I thought Tom Hanley and Jasper Owl just showed that up forward that they can be quite lively. They just couldn't quite make the most of their opportunity, so were perhaps culpable of that 5-15 scoreline that you touched on. And then Lane Ward and Harry Scott, like they did last week against the Dandenong Stingrays, I thought they were able to really capitalise on the opportunity they had, with Xavier Lindsay being out, obviously still suffering a little bit from that hip flexor injury. So we wish him all the best, and we look forward to seeing, yeah, certainly Xavier Lindsay and Jai Esler and some others next year.
So Tasmania moves through to the prelims, and they secure the number one seed, and they take on Eastern, who won this second game 11-18-84 to 10-17-77 against Oakley. Now, geez, with 29 to 27 scoring shots, that could have been two scores over 100. That's pretty full on. But Eastern, I've talked about Isaac Tanzimat as being that reliable forward that always does a job, and probably one that we probably should touch on more is Tyson Schrook in that midfield. He's, you know, sort of the barometer for that team, and he's always handy and reliable. Another really good game from him.
Yeah, I'll touch on those two first. I think it was really good game from him. He was in that mid-half back rotation, as he has been the last few weeks. And he's one that they talk about just being really coachable. His work rate contest to contest is really impressive. His attack on the footy really holds him in good stead as well. And he's generating a little bit of interest. And I think they think he probably deserves a little bit more than he's getting. I think all clubs always say that about those players on the fringe. But he's certainly one who, as a defender, he certainly does defend his man first when he is on that half back line. They do talk about that, and he's also able to provide that drive as well. So he's one to keep an eye on. And you talk about Isaac Tanzimat, and off the back of you being really high on him last week, I did inquire, is he one that they think could get a VFL preseason somewhere? And I think the expectation is that it's there if he wants it. So he does generate those scoring opportunities. The part of this game I saw, I think he had a couple of shots in the first quarter. I wasn't able to convert either of those, but did hit the scoreboard as he always does. And we've talked about that Eastern forward line quite a lot, and I think that really held them in good stead on the day. They've got Liam George, who kicked a couple of goals. He's been really good since he's come back. Really smart, gets to the drop zone really well. Riley Weatherall, one who's really standing up at the right time of the season. I know we've spoken about him the last couple of weeks. Another three-goal performance, and he's really taking on the ownership of responsibility as being that barometer up forward as well. Obviously, Isaac Tanzimat is that smaller player, but as that key player that they look to for a little bit of a spark when they need something. He kicked three goals all at important times and certainly takes those big contested marks, has that aggression, which is probably what we've needed to see from him if he was going to take his game to the next level. And I think he really has elevated. So really impressive performance from him. And Ry Cantwell too had some really impressive overhead marks, some powerful moments that showed why he has got that state combine invite.
And then Oakley's perspective, they were probably every chance to make a premiership run if everything clicked, and it sort of did. Like, to get that close to Eastern and you know, compete that well was impressive, but we're sort of looking at their bottom ages and thinking, wow, they're going to be something to behold next year. So on the day, I mean, even the top ages, who were the impressive performers from Saturday's game?
Yeah, so I think the impressive performers were Kynan Brown again. So he's shown that he can do it in all thirds of the ground now. Like we talked last week about the fact he got 25 and 5 goals, spent a bit more time forward. And now this week, again, he's backed it up. So he's shown he can play off that half-back line, go into the midfield really silky, and now he can hit the scoreboard, takes his opportunities. So I thought it was a impressive performance from him, and he was a big reason why Oakley, who got 24 points down relatively early in the contest, were then able to work their way back into it and make sure it wasn't a comfortable win for Eastern. It was one they really had to work for. So he was the most impressive. I guess if you look at bottom ages, Lucas Tovey is one they've talked a lot about as a key defender coming through. We hear a lot about, you know, Sullivan, Jagger Smith and Tom Gross. They've obviously also got Patrick Reshko, who started to hit some form. Charlie Richardson's one I've talked about. And then Lucas Tovey as well is one they're really excited about, just as someone with a lot of closing speed and all the good attributes that you want in a key defender. They've exposed him in that key defender's role early as that bottom major. You often see key defenders start as key forwards, realise it's not going to work out, so you throw him back. But he's got that experience quite early, so it's good from his perspective. He's been able to do that. And Jet Hartman was another one that impressed. And the other intriguing matchup was Braden LaPlanche, who had an intriguing matchup throughout the day on Billy Hicks. Billy kicked a couple of goals, but LaPlanche probably won it overall, was the view from both camps.
Well, Eastern, yeah, they move now. They play Tassie, which will preview that game in the next little segment. But I'll move to the two games on the Sunday, which I saw at GMHBA. And the first one, disappointingly, for my prediction's sake, GWV went down 9/11/65 to Geelong 13/5/83. And I said this to you, and I listened back to the stream, and you can't actually hear the crowd. The commentary is just like overpowering. You can't, the crowd sound is, that was the loudest I've ever heard a crowd support one team. And we've been at like Sandy Oakley games where a lot of neutrals will turn up and just watch the talent itself. But this was purely Geelong based support, and it was really loud, and it made a really big difference in the end. And Geelong's pressure was really good, really, really good. Quarter one to quarter four, and usually it drops off at some point, but they were, they were keeping at it, and fair play to them. They deserved that win in the end. They just kept going and kicked away, really.
And it's interesting because we talk about GWV, and they're exposing a lot of bottom ages this year. We talk about Jonty Fall, we talk about Sam Lawler. They're going to be really well positioned next year to attack another deep run from a team and get a lot of players drafted. But Geelong exposed a lot of bottom ages last year, and we probably thought all year they're sort of just going. They're probably not going to be one that gets deep. But those, that experience that they've got, those bottom ages from playing five or six games or more last season, seems to have held them in really good stead because, yeah, they did expose more than any other team throughout last season. So maybe if you do want to start with the Geelong players, who was it that stood up? Was it some of those top ages who did have experience as bottom ages last year?
Yeah, it was. It was most of the top ages in the end. And I'll start with Michael Rudd. It was not so much even his forward craft. He just was able to push up the ground. He took a few intercept marks when GWV were rebounding out of their defensive 50 and took about two or three in that first quarter. And it really just helped stem the flow and kicked a really good goal from 50. Quieted off as the game went on, but it was just those, you know, different elements to his game that he was adding, and I thought was quite impressive to watch. Tobin Murray, one you've loved watching, and he's just been one that's built really well from the middle of the season and you know, hitting form at the right time, but really good in transition, just nice kicking. I mean, it was at times it was a bit hit or miss, but cleaned it up as the game went on. Just great pressure. And, yeah, good two-way running, which I'm a big fan of just generally. Yeah. If you've got two-way runners in an AFL team, can take you a long way. But two inside 50s, four rebound 50s. Will McLaughlin was one that just stood out, who hasn't really had a massive game as of recent. And he was terrific, like taking some really good marks inside 50 that you just didn't expect. He's not a big player, but he kicked three goals in the end, and two goals at an important time in the third quarter, I'm pretty sure. So just one that stood up, that you need someone else to stand up. That's not one of your main 22. And he did that, and he was terrific. And then one of my favourites to watch, Tom Anastasopoulos, three goals. Big-time player. This is just, doesn't have to play well every week, but he's proven that he can do it in big times. And he kicked three goals, and two were so important in that third quarter. And I think one got them out to a three-goal lead. GWV did pick that back. But it was just that breather that Geelong needed and got the crowd up and going, that was for sure. I wish that crowd noise was captured because it was very loud. And
we talked about it. Just on Tom Anastasopoulos, we talk about players who need to stand up in finals and get benefited by their team making a deep run. And I think with the way he's starting to play, from the sounds of things, you've obviously watched a bit more of him than I have, he's one who will really benefit and stand up in big moments. And he needs to show that he can be that big game player, like you say, because he has had that form slump. And you think if Geelong's season did finish in that first week of finals, that wild card week, he probably doesn't get looked at necessarily, or his prospects certainly do get diminished just because he did have that real form slump, despite the fact we know he's got that speed and, like you say, that work rate.
Yeah, for sure. And then and you touch on that work rate. There was a great rundown tackle on Joel Frazier, who got about 20 metres gain, and Tom just closed him down just like that. Yeah. And I think it resulted in a goal, but it was at least a scoring shot at the very least, which was fantastic. And Joe Pike is the last one that I want to talk about, because obviously, as we know, it was a poor championships and probably put him out of contention just for a little bit. And I think he's done quite a bit now to suggest he should still be looked at seriously. And last week I sort of talked about, it was that aggressiveness in his game, the physicality that needs to be in, like that has been shown more, and it was definitely on show. It was something I realized, and ruckmans are hard to sort of gauge sometimes whether they're playing well or not and what they, you know, how well they're playing in which elements, but it was everything. I thought he was really physical, just so aggressive in those ruck contests. And I think he had 28 hit outs, and think the GWV ruck had 18. So he did dominate in that contest. But it was, you know, movement in transition. He was getting the ball forward. He was moving it nicely. He wasn't, you know, stagnant after the contest. And I thought he was really impressive. Just one to keep a note of. And like you said, a player that benefits from getting deeper in finals.
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't touch on Lockie Smith earlier, but he's probably the other Gippslander that really stood up. But he's one that's also great on transition. You think about Ruckman, I think generally, you think about them being really good in the contest. You think about their ability to tackle. You don't necessarily think that on transition in fast play, they're able to get involved. So it's interesting you say that about Joe Pike, but we'll move on to the second part of that double header that you saw, Nathan. Sandy beating Northern 14-18, 102 to Northern 6-14-50. From all reports, Northern really never quite were able to challenge Sandy in this one. But one player I'll start with asking you about is Billy McGee, Gallenberdy. I did see a tweet you put out where you said he could sneak his way into draft contention, and he has certainly had a good last month since he's come back from school footy. But what is it that you've seen in his game that you think puts him in that sort of position?
Yeah, well, it's been a very impressive string of form, and it's sort of similar to players we saw last year with Sandy, like Toby McMullen, who just had that really good end to the season, and Sandy ended up making the grand final, and out of nowhere, and that he's a player we didn't expect to get picked up in the end, but similar type. But yeah, really silky smooth with his kicking, and that two-way running was so impressive. His work rate's been exceptional. One that you notice straight away from the first bounce that will just put everything into his game, and it's the little things. And I do think Sandy would be a worse team without him. When you talk about impact players, he's just been so good. And yeah, he deserves probably the praise he's getting, and he was really vital in the end. And Sandy were pretty dominant in this one. I think 14-18, they probably should have won this game by more. And Northern just, they never threatened to really get back into it. I think the closest they got was about four goals in the end, three goals, and yeah, it was a dominant display.
Yeah, and who else from the Dragons outside of Billy McGee, Gallenberdy stood up in that dominant display as you label it?
Yeah, well, it was a very team oriented performance. Well, usually we know with like the goals at the very least, it's sort of reliant on that Archer May, Cal Shadir.
Yep.
To stand up Luke Lloyd. But 11 individual goal scorers was probably the one thing I saw the score share. I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive. You don't usually get that at all in this league. And that was what won them the game. It was I couldn't even pinpoint a key forward that was amazing, and because they were all very good. Luke Lloyd, Will Brown both kicked two. Cooper Lord and Charlie Edwards. Charlie Edwards has continued his good form, really. They're just ticking along really nicely, doing all the team's ins, and again, benefiting from the extra games in this postseason. And Riley Sanders, yeah, dominant as usual. That's just, you know, the casual game for him, 28 and 10 tackles. But yeah, very team performance. There was no real standout for Sandy purely because it was just all happened for them, all came together really nicely.
Absolutely, yeah. And then they do get another key forward back, which we'll touch on later in the podcast when we preview. But from a Northern perspective, they've had some really good performers throughout the season that have either got state combine invites or there or thereabouts might go on to VFL pre-seasons and that sort of thing. Who were the ones that in this last game were able to stand up? I know I've been a big fan of watching Christian Farinato. What was he able to do, if you want to start there, and then some others as well?
Yeah, well, he dominated the stoppages as he usually does, and he was their leading disposal getter by 14 touches. The next highest was 20, so really he was killing them in the midfield, and he was great in transition, as he always is, and that's something he's had to build on and show a bit more promise in, and I think he's done that pretty well, and he was effective. He stood up, didn't drop off at any point, five inside 50s in the end. Parker Heatley, who won, he's, you know, that player that you'd love to have in your team. He's tough. He brings the aggressiveness each game. And I think he did that again. And he won most of his contests, obviously 32 scoring shots. A lot of the Northern defenders struggled, but I thought he was pretty impressive and moved further up the ground and six inside 50s, you know, moving forward. And then Zach Johnson, the bottom major, who I love watching. He's really fun to watch. And he was good in the midfield again, just great in transition and struggled a bit at times, but most of them did in the end. And eight inside 50s, I thought, just capped off a really strong season for him to lead into next year, where I think he'll be definitely a great one to watch that will just, you know, build into something special.
he's certainly a silky player, Zach Johnson, and they've also got Jesse Dettoli and Lucas McInerney that will lead that charge in 2024. But we'll move on to the boys' preliminary final previews now, and we'll start with the Sandy versus Geelong game. And this is one that, on paper, you probably think that Sandy could win because just without even looking at the teams off the cuff, the players that they didn't have playing in this game, and they were still able to beat Northern so convincingly. You had Vic Metro player Taj Houghton not playing. You had Vic Metro player Luke Traynor not playing for various reasons. You had Charlie Harrop, a Vic Metro player, not playing. And you had Miles Enders, who trialled for Vic Metro and wasn't playing. I don't think there'd be any other team that would have so many players out and still be able to win that convincingly, regardless of the quality of the opponent, let alone the fact that it was a team that finished so high in the home and away season. But yeah, in this one, I think the midfield, and we always say, you know, it's a cliche that it's won and lost in the midfield, but I think that class in the midfield is going to prove too strong from a Sandy point of view. They've got Riley Sanders, who, like you say, you know, he does it every week. They've got Levi Ashcroft, who offers something a little bit different, and those two are the playmakers. And Cooper Lord gives them defensive accountability. What do Geelong have to really counter that? I'm not sure they really have a lot. Like, Pat Hughes is going to be a lot of responsibility on him to play that Cooper Lord role for Geelong, but can he really do it? And then who have they got as those stars?
Yeah, well, and then Tom Burke's the other that runs in that midfield group. I guess you're relying on the likes of Malachi White to push forward and but also have that defensive accountability as well. And that's probably the main concern for Geelong. And you look at your forward line, and that's one thing I put here. They prove this week they don't need Rudd to kick their goals. They do have other options, but also the small forwards, they need to fire. And that's what we saw when Tom Anna kicks goals, when Wim McLaughlin, of all people, caught, you know, kicks goals as well. They give himself such a good chance. And I don't know, can they do that? Because I do think Ollie Murphy probably does shut out Michael Rudd. And you've even got Lachie Voss there as well that could take that task. He did the job on Nate Caddy again this weekend. So it's just sort of question marks of if Geelong can find the resources to overcome that depth like you were talking about.
It's another unsung member of that back line is probably Nate Sullivan, I think, who just, you know, plays his role week in, week out, doesn't necessarily get the numbers, but does tend to shut his opponent out of it. It probably will come down to those small forwards. It's probably going to get to ground level a lot of the time. So can Tom Anastasopoulos, those sorts, sweep through River Stevens, you've talked about throughout the season? And that's where I think if Geelong are going to win, those are the sort of players you're going to have to stand up. I know, Sandy, you've got some stars back there. You talk about Billy McGee, Gallenberti, who can get high up the ground and really impact that way. And yes, he's pretty reasonable defensively, as is Archie Roberts. But when you think of one-on-one shutdown defenders that are small, they've got probably Ethan Williams back there. And I don't know if they've really got a secondary player. So if Ethan Williams goes to Tom Anastasopoulos, does that free up River Stevens to then, as has happened a lot this season for Geelong, it's a bit of a niche position, isn't it? That small backline role, because there's a lot that like to get up and rebound and drive. But that, in terms of being really accountable back there, I think that's where River Stevens will have to come into it, or whether it be someone else. But yeah, they'll need to find different avenues to go on. It'll be an interesting watch. And you touch on Joe Pike as well, just to transition the conversation. He will be a really interesting watch against Vigo Vizentini, who's probably due a big performance. You didn't touch on it, but he did get a reprimand in the last game. It was down to a reprimand, something pretty clumsy. And he just probably hasn't quite been at his best in the last 5 or 6 weeks. Again, we've talked about it a lot. It takes Brucks a lot of time to develop, but he would want to show a little bit more than he probably has since he's been back at Sandy. And Pike, on the other hand, has been in really good form. So Pike v. Vizentini might be a really big watch, particularly when we talk about the importance of that midfield battle.
Yeah, it will be. And Vigo does need a big performance. And Pike does make a big difference, as we saw in this last game, where he can make a difference in transition. That's probably something Vigo has lacked a little bit recently. So if Pike does get on top, it does help Geelong's midfield quite substantially because you look at the difference in the midfielders. It could play a really big part. So that being said, what is your tip? And we'll say by how much for this one. Not that it will count, but let's just give a margin as well. But I'll start. I think, and another thing to add, I think if Sandy... Geelong can't let Sandy get off to a quick start. That is like vital, because they did it this weekend and Northern were playing catch up the whole time. I'd say Sandy do it by 25.
Yeah, and I'll say Sandy by 2 goals over Geelong. I also want to touch on there's a chance we see Charlie Harrop return, which will bolster them again up forward. But again, he's another tall marking forward. So they're going to have Kelty Deer, Archer May, Luke Lloyd, and Charlie Harrop all up there. Like, there's so many marking options. It's going to be really tough. And that's maybe a spot where Geelong can expose them when it hits the deck. Do they have those ground level players? Like, Josh Dolan doesn't have as much experience. So is that where Geelong can really try and get a point of difference, have Angus Hastie drive it out of the back line? But yeah, Sandy by 12 points.
And then Tasmania and Eastern. So first of the country versus second of the Metro Conference. Yep. This will be interesting because I feel like Tassie, like, they always find a way to win. Like, is that not something that, you know, we saw it against Dandenong that last round. They were getting dominated in that first half, and they were there. And, look, I didn't see the Gippsland game, but from what you say, you know, Gippsland probably should have put them away, but they didn't. So,
yeah,
interesting. And Eastern are in terrific form. I think what this is now their third or fourth win in a row. So they're peaking at the right time. I'll let you take this one away. Where's it won? Where's it lost?
Yeah, I like what you say. I like what you say about the Tasmania just seem to have that winning habit. They really do. It's the last couple of weeks. What you said is spot on. But I think where it's won and where it's lost is Eastern have got a lot, and we talk about their forward line and the way it functions. And I'll be really curious to see how it functions this time. Of course, won and lost in the midfield. We say that every time. But from a Eastern forward line, Tassie back point of view, how many of those forwards that can all score goals at will Tassie be able to keep quiet? You've got Nick Watson, who no doubt, you know, a lot of time will go into him. But then you take him out of it. You've got Isaac Tanzimat, who's performed in Nick Watson's absence. You take him out of it. You've got Liam George, who's shown really strong form at Halebury. And then his two performances since he has been back at Eastern have been really, really strong. From a key position point of view, Reichhampwell is hitting form at the right times, had a couple of really strong games. And Riley Weatherill loves the responsibility and seems to be seizing upon his moments. So down back for Tassie, you've got Ari Schoenmaker is going to be that really key player for them to give them a lot of aerial presence, but then also drive out of the back line so that you are minimising that territory that Eastern get. Because you think if the ball spends too much time in Eastern's forward half, those players, along with the midfielders who'll push up, the Marais type players, that it's just going to be too hard for Tasmania to counter. There's just too much talent. I'll speak to people from Eastern during the week, and they said it's probably the most talented list that Eastern has had since he's been there, and this is the going back 7 or 8 years. And they did have 10 players drafted a few years ago, I think 2017. But this year they might only have 3 or 4, but they're probably going to have 15 or 16 that go into VFL programs. So when you look at that, 19 future state league or AFL players, it's a really formidable lineup you're coming up against, Easton.
Yeah, no, for sure. And something I'm excited to watch in this game as well, it's that, you know, Tassie forwards v Eastern defence. You've got Leake, Ollington, and then Laplanche, Tovey. That's something that'll be fantastic to watch. And we've seen how vital, you know, players like James Leake have been for Tassie recently coming into the right form. You can even chuck Jack Cohen in that mix, depending on where he does get a run in this game. But That's probably, we've seen Tassie convert. That's the reason they win games. They find ways to score, and it does enough for them in the end, because what they kicked 62 against Gippy, and I think it was 69 against Dandenong. So they can win with low scores. So that's something I'd be pretty happy to have in my back going into this game if you're Tassie.
Yeah, and that you're right. That defence does tend to hold up from a Tassie point of view, but from an Eastern point of view, it does as well. They've got so many role players back there. So, yes, the James Leake types have been able to hit the scoreboard regularly in the last few weeks, or not, but regularly enough to give them that score, give them that winning score, even if it is a lower score. But coming up against Remy McLean, coming up against Josh Tovey, Cooper Trembath, who takes his intercept marks, I think this is probably on paper the best defence in the league, and it's the most settled. They've played so much time with each other now, and it seems to all be coming together this last month, that if there's a team they're going to come unstuck against, these players who are allies players, they're very good players, but they have, some of them made their names in other positions in defence. You talk about James Leake, there's a team they're going to come unstuck against, it's going to be Eastern, and for that reason I'm going to tip Eastern to win this one by 3 goals.
Well, I'm looking up now. These two teams did play. They played all the way back in April now, And Tassie got the job done by 19. Obviously, I don't know if they were full teams or not back then. I'd have to agree. I'd say Eastern get this done. I think this will be four quarters. I think on paper, you'd probably think Eastern might just blow them away, but I feel like Tassie always make this go four quarters. Eastern by 9. Close game. And remind me of your tip, Eastern by...
Eastern by 3 goals.
Eastern by 3 goals. There we go.
Yeah.
All right, let's move. Girls draft combine review. So we got that news literally, I think, after we recorded last week, which is a little bit annoying for our sake. But we've got that news now. A lot of girls that got invited, which is great to see, and a lot that were extremely deserving of their spot. And there's one that we were shaking our heads at that didn't get a spot. We'll leave that till the end. But let's go through a couple players, and we'll start with one I know you like watching, Keely Fullerton.
Yep.
And we're going to touch on sort of the things we're excited to see, I guess, in their testing and et cetera. Yep. But Keely Fullerton, we look her running, 2Ks, fun to watch.
Yeah, one to watch. I think her GPS numbers have been off the charts when she's played for Bendigo, and she was really big in that big ground at WA in the last game for Vic Country. So she's very small, so that might work against her from a draft point of view, but she's certainly going to show in the 2K testing that she's right up there and worthy of her place. I was glad to see her get invited. I'll touch on a couple of others and then I'll throw back to you. But yeah, Christy Lee Weston Turner, her 20-meter sprint is something I'm really looking forward to seeing. Her and Amber Shute both ran that 20-meter sprint really well in preseason, and I think we've seen when both of them have played this season and been at their best, it's when they've got that acceleration off the mark. So hopefully they're able to test well. Lara Hausegger, Michaela Williamson both tested well in preseason as well. Lara Hausegger, we know, having watched her at talent league level, her agility is what she sort of bases her game around, and that comes through in the testing. Michaela Williamson's ability to get contest to contest lends itself to a really good 2K time trial.
And then, you know, the likes of Amy Gaylor, very excited to see in her testing, because we know she was injured in the start of the season, but she's come back and continued that form. Hayley McLaughlin, one of my favourite winners to watch in the girls comp. She'll be terrific in her testing. I feel like she's built her endurance really well, and her 2K should be fantastic. Amber Shute is one that pretty glad she got the call up there, because her champs form definitely suggested she's hit some great patches of form. And I guess one that, we alluded to, that didn't get an invite was Ruby Murdoch, who that's pretty frustrating, to be quite honest. I don't understand how she didn't. That's the truth of that. But she's been pretty impressive in terms of a player that I think fits that sort of role player type and does everything you need to. She does it. And I know this is testing base, et cetera, but still pretty unlucky.
Yeah, she is. And I think her running's very good. So it would have been good to show that off at the testing. She certainly would have enhanced her prospects had she got to test. So hopefully she gets added, because I know from a Dandenong point of view, they expected she would get the invite just based on the talk that they've heard. And she's certainly shown that as that offensive winger, she's got that flair on the footy field, and she's been able to shut down some key opponents. She did it again on the weekend against GWV. So I've really liked watching her. I think she's added some strings to her bow this season. Eastern's rucks, I was really glad to see both of them invited. Obviously, Jess Vukic was always going to get invited, and her vertical leap will be one to watch. But just into Hose as well, we know how disappointing the news that she injured her other ACL. She ruptured it, but she's bounced back. Well, hopefully she's bouncing back and in good spirits, but she's certainly one that is invited and obviously won't do the testing, but is still going to be part of it, which is really good. You talk about some players and their ability to sprint, Nathan, and how important that can be in the girls' game. I think Gemma Ragone's shown that for Oakley, and she's one that we'll touch on in the girls' previews, which we'll get to in a second. But that's one that we'll look forward to seeing. And I was also glad to see Tyler Crabtree and Lucy Cronin get invited. I think Tyler Crabtree used the national champs to really excel her form off the back of that, and Lucy Cronin, probably the best player in the talent league in my opinion, that didn't play in the national championships, so certainly up there with them in terms of top ages.
Good segue, because Lucy Cronin is one that I've got on this match review for the girls elimination final, so we'll get stuck into them. But the first game, Oakley 7-5-47 to Calder 1-3-9. This is a game where the scoreline did not reflect how even the contest was, I thought, and Calder just didn't have a key forward to kick their goals. And it was really down to that, because in that first quarter and a bit of, you know, and that third quarter, Calder had the the dominance. They were able to win the midfield battle, move it forward. They just didn't have anyone to kick their goals. And I want to touch on this, and I'm not going to actually touch on Calder more than Oakley, even though they lost, but I was so impressed with this. It was not a trio because there's four of them, but Chloe Baker-West, Amy Gaylor, Kayla Kavanagh, Jade McClay. I have not seen a four so dominant in the midfield in the girls' competition this year. I think it was unrivaled what they could do, just the talent. I'm disappointed they will not all play together again. Obviously, Gaylor and Kavanagh, unlikely not to play again, assuming they will get picked up come the end of the year. But also impressive, just so clean. Like, if you want any example of how well women's football has developed, those four are your prime example right there. They were so fun to watch. Chloe Baker-West, 31 touches, 7 tackles, 6 rebound 50s. Kaylee Kavanagh's pressure was terrific with 10 tackles and doing it on both ends of the ground. Jaden McClay played her role in the ruck a lot and had 16 hitouts. And then she moved to full forward, but the loss was that then the sort of ruck contest was lost. So that's where Calder was struggling a bit. And Amy Gaylor, 12 touches and 8 tackles. So she was ultra impressive. And they were just fantastic to watch. And they'll grow into terrific players. On the Oakley side of it, as you touched on at the end, Lucy Cronin, her and Sienna Talaridi and on that halfback line, I think held Oakley together, especially in that first quarter. They were under pressure for the first 18 minutes of that quarter and they kicked a late goal. They were just relieved the pressure. They were good with their exit kicks, especially Sienna Talaridi, I thought was ultra impressive. And she stood up. Unlike any other player on that Oakley team, I thought it was just their defenders that did the job. Because like I said, if Calder had an effective forward on that day, I think this result could have gone a bit differently.
Yeah.
Alessia Dunn, 3 goals for 5 touches is pretty handy for someone who hasn't gotten the score sheet as much. And then Sarah Pousty was terrific in transition and provided really good looks inside 50 with 27 touches, 6 inside 50s and 8 tackles. So, and a result we expected, but one that I think could have gone a completely different way given different circumstances. But that Oakley win their way through.
Yeah, and interesting what you say about those four midfielders and that they probably only get to play as midfielders because of the ability of that ruck being Jade McClay to follow up and provide them with that point of difference in there. And it sounds like they all complemented each other well. So it is disappointing from a Calder perspective. We don't get to see them all again together because it sounds like it did start to click at the right time. They just came up against a freight train in Oakley who are probably the second favourites to Eastern or arguably the favourites to win the premiership.
Yeah, well, it was props to Calder. It was a very impressive performance against that. A team like Oakley. I moved to the second game, which wasn't as thrilling. Eastern 13, 11, 89 to 1, 4, 10, Northern. Sort of one we predicted purely because, I mean, Sandy, who missed finals, only lost to them by 2 points. I think Northern just weren't hitting their straps really at the right time. And there was not really much to talk about on this one. Pisano kicked 4 goals, effective, and just a good confidence booster for her. Emma Stilvey, good movement inside 50. She was really aggressive inside forward 50 and just pushed forward that ball movement really well. And then Laura Stone, a bit of a forward presence we're getting a bit later on in the season. She's kicked 2 goals in this one and she kicked 2 goals a couple games ago as well. And then from a Northern perspective, good to see the young players like Zoe Hargreaves performing really well. She's been fantastic to watch. And then Talia Plunkett and Winnie Buckley were really good in the midfield, I thought, as well, under quite a lot of pressure. They just couldn't match them in the end and Eastern win through as expected. We'll move to the second 2 games of the elimination finals. Geelong, 11-8, 74 to 7-5, 47 Tassie. I'll start with my of the Tasmanian girls.
Okay.
Obviously, actually, something we need to mention as well. We want to pay our respects and well wishes to the Tasmanian under-16s girl who unfortunately passed away last week. It was very sad news to hear. And that was very emotionally charged, this game, for these Tassie girls, as you can imagine. And they came out with a flyer, realizing they kicked the first 4 goals of the game and really put Geelong under pressure. And Ava Reid was the main girl in that game. 4 goals, really high work rate in the end, and hard goals as well, rewarded for her effort. Lucy Thompson, really good first quarter, and it was a hometown game for her. So, again, really charged by that spirit, competed all day. Harriet Binley, who we've talked quite a bit about on this podcast, 17 touches, 5 tackles, 4 inside 50s, 2 rebound 50s, doing it all across the ground, but playing as that ruck slash forward hybrid. And she's looking forward to a big preseason, and she'll build really nicely into next year. Georgia Clark, one in terms of work rate, who blows you away with the GPS numbers. Covered 9 Ks, 125 metres per minute. High. Wow. Work, I mean, that's, yeah, I mean, I get tired after 125 metres, so that is that's ridiculous. And then Georgia Haberley was their top disposal getter on the day, reads the footy really well, and just a good link-up player on the day. And Sophie Strom, 13 touches, 4 inside 50s, covered the ground really well, played that second half out in the midfield, which is sort of where she'll be moving her football to next year into her top age year. So Tassie, yeah, battled wild day, and they were down 2 rotations going into the last quarter, so fought it out.
Always going to be tough when that's the case. Yeah, Sophie Strong, I'm glad to see she's in good form. I've liked watching her the last couple of weeks when I've got to watch Tassie, or got to watch her in the under-17 showcase as well. From a Geelong perspective, yeah, the players that stood up are probably the players you expect to. So obviously Sarah Howley, you know the class of her. She, as a bottom major, was really impressive again. And Chloe Adams, who probably stepped out of her shadow a little bit, we talked about last week with Sarah Howley missing, was able to carry forward that form and give them in the midfield that work rate. So impressive. And like you say, Tassie going into that last quarter, a couple of rotations down, and Geelong having those assets who have such big tanks would have, or certainly did make a difference late, and Geelong were able to run over the top of Tasmania. The other one that we probably don't talk enough about in this podcast is a bottom major, another one overshadowed probably by Sarah Howley, is Chloe Bryant. When she's playing good footy, Geelong are a better team. And there's no doubt about that. She just gives them something a little bit different. She got 24 disposals on the day and was really impressive for the Falcons as well. So really liked watching her. And Chantal Mason, who you sense, if Geelong are to cause an upset and beat Eastern this week, is one who's going to have to kick a lot of goals. She kicked 3 goals and was a real presence in that forward 50. She's obviously kicked a lot of goals this season, maybe has had a couple of quieter weeks in the last month or so, but she was certainly back somewhere near her best and took her opportunities when they came to her. But we'll move on to the Dandenong versus GWV game now, 9-11-65 to 0-1-1. I think this is a result we both expected, Nathan.
Yeah, it was. And Dandenong, too powerful. Depth is just going to overcome it really all the time. And no Jess Wrench for the Rebels, which would have been a big loss. But who stood up for the Rebels? And we'll start with them. Yeah. A pretty good season to make finals in the end and do what they did in the end. But there's one name here who we've talked about a lot, but how did she play? Talk about her and a ruck as well.
Yeah. Well, just before we get to individual players, a lot of credit has to go to GWV's first quarter. Yeah. Like, they came and they put Dandenong under a lot of pressure, and that there would have been some panic at quarter time. Dandenong led 1-0. It could easily have been 2 or 3 goals the other way. They had all the play, it felt like, GWV. They were on top in the contest. They were really good. Fortunately, couldn't sustain it. And like you say, the class won out in the end. Tyler Crabtree was that player that you talk about, we always talk about, in the midfield. And she was the one who gave them four-quarter effort and was able to keep it really, really close for a lot of the day with her pressure that she brings. Work rate, contest to contest. Layla Lappin competed really hard in the ruck against Ali Simons, but was ultimately outclassed, Ali Simons being the best on ground in the day. And Millie Lang, another one we talk so much about, just about best on ground. If she doesn't play, they probably lose this game by another 6 or 7 goals. And usually we see her base her game around her marking. When she's at her best, she's taking intercept marks, and then her game's really taking off from there. On this day, it was just the swarm of inside 50s from Dandenong. She only took 2 marks, but she got her hands on the footy 25 times, just as someone who applied lots of pressure and was then able to rebound it out.
And then Dandenong perspective, I mean, who needed a big game leading into this, probably the next week of finals, but some good rucks and good bottom majors they've got coming through. And 2 you noted from a very early part of this season as well that played really well. I think it was in that Oakley game, but how were the Dandenong girls in the end, who's building really well?
Yeah, and you talk about players who need to show a little bit. I mean, I guess Ruby Murdoch did miss that, as much as we were surprised, missed the combine. So she'd be keen to continue to put forward some good performances. And yeah, like I say, there's a view that she was unlucky to miss, but she certainly gave them a lot of rebound out of the back line. She was important. Mikhail Williamson, Meg Robertson, we know what they're going to do every week. And they were too classy in the middle, despite the pressure coming to them. Gemma Reynolds, another one. But yeah, I think you watch the, if you've got any spare time, watch the first 5 minutes of the second quarter of the Dandenong versus GWV game, because saw two of the great ruck goals you will ever see. So one was Ali Simons, and I think it shows the progression of the women's game as well. One was Ali Simons. She kicked an entry kick inside 50, went down the corridor, kicked it 40 metres, got intercepted by a GWV defender. The GWV defender then looked to take it out quickly, but Ali Simons read it like a book, the 30-metre exit kick. She intercepted it and then kept running and kicked it from 50. So the work of women's footy to get to the point where that sort of thing is happening, it was a real X-factor moment. And, yeah, a lot of credit to Ali Simons. 21 hit-outs and 20 touches on the day, so it was an outstanding performance. Her work around the ground was impressive. And then Zoe Basanko ran around three GWV defenders, fended off tackles, and then finished on the boundary line. Yeah, really impressive goal there as well. So, yeah, a couple of really big moments from them. Zoe Basanko had 5 shots on goal. It was a big presence up forward with Sophie Butterworth going off early with an injury, only finished with 3 touches, but she's expected to play this week, which is really handy for the Stingrays. Jermaya Breslin, probably the other one who gave them a lot of run on the wing.
Well, let's move into the prelim final previews. We'll start with Eastern and Geelong. So, fair props, actually, just say that Eastern and Geelong both boys and girls programs have made it this far. It's a very impressive feat for both of them. In my honest opinion, I don't think this will be very competitive. I think Geelong have, we've seen with Geelong, that they struggle, their depth doesn't hold up against the top Metro teams. Yep. And we saw it against Eastern. It was during the champs where Metro were playing. So Eastern lost a lot of their players. Geelong were full strength and they still couldn't win. Yep. So I just think it's the depth that will be an issue for them in the end. And Geelong's key questions are sort of, can they shut down Eastern's transition? Because this is a team who can pile about 5 goals on in the space of 10 minutes, which we saw a couple of weeks ago in Oakley when they played Sandy. You're needing your forwards like Chantel Mason and Bella Gillam to kick your goals and be pretty efficient as well. You can't really afford to squander your scoring shots. So, yeah, those are my main questions in terms of if Geelong are to get the job done and cause a pretty big upset.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the other one is, how do you shut down from an Eastern perspective? You've got so many routes to goal. Alicia Pisano, there's so much focus on her. Rightly, she's going to be a top 5 pick. But Joe Sunderland possibly gets the job on her. I've really liked what she's shown since her form for Vic Country before that. Probably hadn't taken as much notice of her. But if you shut Pisano down, they're going to get you in another way. They've got so many different players who can kick goals off that half-forward line. Stacia Stevenson being one of them. Jess Vukic even can go down and take a mark and kick a goal if she's rotated through there. There's so many. Grace Ballany's done it as well. They've got a lot of players that are versatile that can go forward but also play other positions. And the other concern, I would say, from a Geelong point of view, is in the midfield. I just think, yes, that Geelong have got players that are in form. Like we talk about Chloe Bryan, Chloe Adams and Sarah Howley. But Eastern have got players that are, you know, towards the top end of the draft class. And then they've also brought in a girl by the name of Taylor McMillan, who just gives them so much speed out of there. When you talk about a team who's able to pile on 5 goals in 8 or 9 minutes, I think that speed that she gives them and that burst, the ability to get it in there quickly from the centre, is something she's shown time and time again, particularly in recent weeks. I think Eastern just enter with too much form, both as a team, but also individually.
Yeah, well, I have to agree with you. And you sort of touched on here as well that we've got that Geelong went into that Tassie game off poor form, and then sort of started pretty poorly. And that's one thing. If you start poorly against Eastern, like they're not going to be playing catch-up footy. That's the reality. It's either you sort of get in front and hold that, or you're playing catch-up and probably don't give yourself a lot of a chance in the end. Our tips, I say Eastern do this pretty comfortably. In all honesty, I'll say Eastern by 32.
And I'll say Eastern by 36.
Here we go. Second game. This is like the loser of this is that stiff to go out of the prelim. And this will be fantastic to watch. Unfortunately, I won't be able to be there with family commitments, but you'll be at this one. You'll be at both these, Jonty. Dandenong and Oakley. This will be a terrific game to watch.
Yeah.
I think you just can't pick a better. This could be a grand final, really. Like, in all honesty, this could be a granny.
Yeah.
Where do we even start? Like, there's just so many elements to this game. I'll just start on the last time these two teams played, and I'll let you lead into this, though.
Yeah.
Oakley got it done by 3 goals in a game we were at, which I still stand by this. This was the best game of girls footy I've seen in my lifetime since I've started, since I've been in the under 18 space. It was terrific. Dandenong couldn't capitalise in the end. I think they kicked 2-8 on that night, and Oakley were clinical. The likes of Emma McDonald, Maya Stobie stood up in that forward line, kicked some crucial goals. And we'll touch on this first point. We start in the middle, the ruck dominance. Dandenong have it.
Yeah, Dandenong do have it, and there's no doubt about it. You talk about last week the fact that Oakley were dominated in the ruck by Calder, and someone who their preferred position isn't going to be ruck. She's not going to be a ruck next year, Jade McClay. They throw her in there and she was reasonably successful. Dandenong have two players who played in that under-17 showcase as rucks, Zoe Pasenko and Ali Simons, both entering on really good form. So I think that Dandenong actually have a superior midfield as well. So if you've got a couple of really good rucks who are going to be refreshed because they're both going to be rotating, and they're feeding to a really good midfield in Michaela Williamson and Meg Robertson in particular, who complement each other well, and then you've got others who run through there as well, Gemma Reynolds, so clean. I think that's an area that Dandenong are going to have to exploit Oakley if they're going to win, because then you go forward for Dandenong and they've got so many different avenues to go. Sophie Butterworth is that real focal point. Zoe Pasenko, when she goes up there, they've got Abby Tregarlis as well, who's able to hit the scoreboard. And then they've got some smaller options as well who have hit the scoreboard regularly too. And they're midfielders. Their midfielders can kick goals. Meg Robertson has done it. Michaela Williamson has done it. Gemma Reynolds has done it. So I think they're different sources of kicking goals is something in a high pressure game that, you know, probably does end low scoring, just because both these teams you expect are going to bring the heat. I think the fact that Dandenong got different avenues to goal is going to hurt them. And I guess you're probably going to say that Oakley have got lots of different avenues to goal too, which is true.
Well, it is true. And my next point I was going to bring up, and I don't even think it's their forward line necessarily, because I think they can function under quite a lot of different circumstances, but it was I think in that last game, it was their halfbacks from Oakley that really struggled in transition. And that's where Dandenong had so much pressure. You know, that's where they were winning that game until they let him out. The likes of Lara Hausegger, Sienna Tellerady, Amy Karasbretz, Lucy Cronin. If those girls are able to move it pretty effectively, and we know they cope well under pressure, I think Dandenong will struggle quite a lot. If they're able to maintain that pressure they did in that last game, where they would just the constant repeat stoppages inside 50, they could put a score on them that is quite hard to come back from. Because I think Oakley's forward line, I'd say more than 50% of the time, they kick goals when the ball goes in there, at least getting scoring shot from it. Yeah. And something Calder did well against them, actually, they were restricting how deep they could get it inside 50. They were setting up pretty well, and that's something Dandenong would definitely be capable of. So the deeper it goes inside 50 for Oakley, the more dangerous they are, because a lot of the small forwards can't kick as far. So they are more of a threat the deeper you go in. You're looking at the likes of Emma McDonald to really kick your goals from a bit further out. So it's really interesting, because I tipped Oakley as my premiers.
Yeah.
I think Dandenong have the slight advantage in this one.
Yeah.
I have to say Oakley. I tipped them as my premiers. I think this will be extremely close. I think it will be one in the last quarter. I don't think it would be I doubt this will be sort of just, you know, done and dusted by three-quarter time.
Yeah, I'd agree with
Oakley that. Oakley by 8.
Yeah, I think the area, and I touched on the areas that Dandenong will be really strong in and could exploit them. And the other thing is Gemma Ramsdale down back. She's one who's stood up in recent weeks. But the area that I think Oakley, similar to what you say, can really expose Dandenong is they don't have a heap of talent. It's a little bit of younger talent on their wings. So Ruby Murdoch's moved down back and been really good down there since she's moved there. Whereas you look at Oakley on their wings, they've got, like you say, Amy Karasbrett and Gemma Ragone, who can really drive it forward, drive it inside 50. And that's where those deeper entries could come into it. So I think that's worth touching on as well. Yeah. If Oakley in, it's probably going to be on the spread and on their ability to move the footy rather than win it at the contest, get clearances, and then get it inside 50. So, yeah, this is a difficult one. Dandenong haven't lost, by the way, since that last opening.
Yeah.
Touch on the start. Yeah, so they're on a massive winning streak, and for that reason, I'm going to go Dandenong by a point. I'm going to go Dandenong in a cliffhanger.
Well, this actually, this game, I'm thinking, decides our tipping comp, not decides it, but the current result, I'm up 135 to 134. So if Oakley were to win, I win the comp because the grand, there's two grand final games. I take that back, but I can't lose if Oakley win this. It would only be a draw at the most. And if Dandenong win, we go into a tie on the grand final, which would just be fitting because it's no one can seem to win. But there we go. That wraps it up. A really big weekend. We're very excited to get into this stage of the season. As I touched on before, Jonty will be at the two girls games and we'll both be at the two boys games at Bendigo on Sunday. So next week is a grand final preview show. We're just going to really touch on the prelims and get straight into the grand final previews and, you know, whoever, who to look out for and everything like that. So we're excited for that. Look out on our socials for a lot of content relating to these finals. We're going to go into a bit more, you know, player, who to watch, who the standout performers are, in a bit of a summarized version on a graphic. So if you like the look, if you like the sound of that, make sure to follow us on the socials. Thank you all for watching. Subscribe for more content and we'll see you next week.